Good evening. Welcome to Employment Law Today. I'm your host, Eric Sauver. I'm an employment law and business law attorney at the law office of Eric M. Sauver. And I'm here Tuesday nights at 5 p.m. where I have guests each week and we discuss the most prevailing and prominent issues around employment and labor law that particularly affect and impact small to mid-sized companies and business owners. And so in that spirit, our topic tonight is data-driven employer success using statistics and analytics in hiring practices. And I have a very interesting guest tonight with a very unique and interesting method and methodology. And I'd like to welcome him to the show, Chris Koons of Koons Analytics. Welcome to Employment Law Today.
Thank you, Eric. Great to be here.
Wonderful. I'm going to give you a more proper fitting introduction in just a moment. But before I do, I thought I would take a little bit to describe to our guests a little more detail about our topic, particularly the data-driven employer success. And so in that vein, many businesses, as many of us know, struggle with problematic patterns in their hiring practices. I see this quite often as an employment law attorney. They hire managers and supervisors who contribute to a discriminatory workplace environment, as an example. They also may have employers who fail to create solid hiring criteria to weed out poorly performing employees who may lower the company's productivity. And these same patterns may persist for employers during succession planning or organizational changes or in employee retention. So during the pandemic, with companies undergoing these great and seismic changes, the need for reliable hiring practices, the need for solid employee retention and succession planning practice is critical. So the question becomes, how can one use the statistical data or analytics? How can that be helpful to an employer to increase their chance of reducing discriminatory hiring practices? How can data and analysis of statistics help a business to increase their employee retention rate? So on this episode of Employment Law Today, my guest, Christopher Koons, and I of Koons Analytics, LLC, will discuss this topic in more detail. And before we do, as I promised you, Chris, I would give you a little more of a proper introduction because you certainly have an impressive background I think our viewers should be aware of. Here goes. My guest tonight, folks, is Chris Koons. Chris is the founder and president of Koons Analytics, LLC, as I mentioned. Chris is a multilingual data scientist with 20 years of experience predicting employee performance, safety, and retention, assisting hundreds of companies across the globe to implement screening assessments and leadership surveys. Chris Koons uses machine learning algorithms to build and validate predictive models so that new candidate and employee data can be scored efficiently and accurately through customized and interactive applications. As a Phi Beta Kappa graduate of Marquette University with a liberal arts degree, Chris also completed studies in philosophy at the Gregorian University in Rome, Italy. He was a recruiter throughout Europe, and he worked for 3 years as a student counselor at the Albertus Magnus University in Cologne and the Heinrich Heine University, if I pronounced that correctly, in Dusseldorf, Germany. Chris recently worked 4 years in R&D at John Wiley & Sons Workplace Learning Solutions Division through Koons Analytics. And while there, he leveraged governmental workforce and client data to publish a library of 139 job-related performance models for PXT Select certified partners and their clients. Chris Koons is a certified consultant with Frontline Systems, Inc., the premier creator and distributor of optimization, simulation, and data mining software. And finally, he is a FutureSolve advisor assisting HR professionals to navigate the waters of psychometric testing. So, Chris, you gave me some tongue twisters there when you described a bit.
Yeah, and it sounds like a mouthful, right? Some of those words. I think you spoke German pretty well there. Convince me.
Oh, thank you. Well, great. Thank you so much. Well, it's seriously a pleasure to introduce you to the show. And so this topic really strikes a chord in me as an employment law attorney. I often have clients come to me for compliance with labor and employment laws or for defense when they haven't complied. And I've seen clients who tragically make the same mistakes in their hiring, they fail to properly vet their employees. They don't have a sound method for evaluating data for their employees. And so they have the same issues over and over again with discriminatory managers and so forth. So I'm really glad to have you on the show. I was wondering, I know I said a lot about you, but can you tell us a little bit more about yourself and your company? You know, how'd you get to the place of founding Coons Analytics? And what would you describe as your company's main mission?
Sure, Eric. Thank you. Well, I found myself as an employee of a very large publishing company. They had purchased a smaller psychometric assessment publishing company. And I went into research and development as a consultant. My task was to look at over 10 million data points from client results over a 3.5 year period to see in those data patterns that we could use to build a completely new library of models for our clients. And so this is the type of an assessment that's administered during a screening process for job applicants. They log online. These applicants are typically finalists, or sometimes it's earlier in the procedure, but they take an assessment online. When they're done, it's automatically matched to a pattern or a performance model, and the applicant tracking system will sometimes receive the data, and the recruiter will see an overall fit score or job match score, and reports are delivered to those who are going to interview the candidate. Well, as I was doing that, I found that, I'm going to need to write some code, some software development, and I was working in a statistical program from IBM SPSS. And up until then, the company was only scoring one assessment at a time. But in order for me to analyze my data, I need to be able to score hundreds and thousands of assessments at a time, get their match scores to whatever model I was building so I could analyze it. And then I figured out, well, let's write a program that would create the optimal model based upon the performance data from a client and a large data set of people in that company who had completed. Let's see if we can get the computer to basically find the optimal model with the highest correlation, the most value, the greatest validity. And that led me down a path where I knew I had to get back into consulting, because that was all about customization. And the company I was working for were basically catering to boilerplate and another use of the product that wasn't for mid-size or larger companies in the way I was customizing it. So that's how that happened in 2018. But they gave me word, and I knew, so I basically started my company up at the end of 2016 as a consulting firm, and was able to begin a search for even better ways to build models.
It's interesting, a lot there to take in and to really focus on. I know you mentioned the importance of having a large pool of applicants or people to use to evaluate certain patterns. And one thing I wonder too is, when you are talking to a prospective, let's say, customer of yours, a client, a company that is coming to you and they're saying, hey, we're having these issues, we keep hiring people who are not performing well, or you keep hiring the same sort of bad apples, if you will, bad actors. Is there a way that you sort of succinctly put this in a nutshell for them? Like, how do you explain it in a way that captures their interest?
Yes.
Is there like a short, like a primer? I'm genuinely curious, I know, because I know my clients who might need this, or people listening tonight would want to know how they would.
Right. So I would tell them that out of all the information that they gather during a job candidate screening, from the application, phone screening questions with their answers, background check information, and references, that the test, the psychometric assessment, is the most valid. And it's the easiest way to look at hidden or latent traits that is very difficult for an interviewer to get a grasp on. People are so practiced and coached in interviewing. They read books, they go to courses, they put on their best persona and clothes, and they just, but then sometimes when they're hired, the next day you see them at work and it's like a different person. So it's basically, we're going to take a deep dive into this person's comfort zone in different psychological characteristics, cognitive abilities, and occupational interests to get different dimensions of who they are, like their DNA. And that's going to allow us to make much more accurate personnel decisions because we have more information about who they are and if they're going to fit the job.
It makes a lot of sense, Chris, when you think about it, because you're right. People who might say, well, why, people who might ask the question, well, why would I need this deep dive, the analytical data, when I can assess people through interviewing, through conversations, through a second interview? Well, I agree with you that people these days are very much like they're coached in and taught and trained how to interview properly. And some people are better than others, let's say, at disguising or hiding their bias, right? We've all, if we've ever interviewed for jobs, read about, you know, tips online of what to say and what not to say. So it's interesting that your test can target what I heard you say was right, sort of the implicit, perhaps, biases or subtle, maybe say character flaws or traits or just the indicators of some kind of issue that says this person, this employee, would not be a good fit for this company. So that's really, I think it's a great way to explain. I'm hearing you talk about, right, the complex aspects, you know, the how you sort of work, sort of like the making of a sausage, if you will, the back behind the scenes, and how you would present it to someone who might be interested in your services. I've certainly seen the need for the deep dive. And, you know, a lot of times we'll see in employment law, and people out tonight who are listening might notice that there, it is truly difficult to assess, as you mentioned, someone's implicit biases or challenges. So I really appreciate hearing this. And I am curious about, you know, we talk about this analytics and such. I'm wondering a question that might be best suited when we come back from a commercial break in a moment. But the question would be, what types of businesses, so you can think about it during the break, would do you think best benefit from your method, some statistics and analysis to improve the hiring practices in terms of the size of the business or, let's say, a certain industry or field? So that's the thing I want to ask when we come back. We are here tonight on Employment Law Today on talkradio.nyc, a station that we're on each week. I'm the host, Eric Sauber, and my guest is Chris Coons of Coons Analytics LLC. We're speaking about data-driven employer success using stats and analytics in the hiring practices. So stick around. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Talk Radio NYC at www.talkradio.nyc. Now broadcasting 24 hours a day.
Are you a conscious co-creator? Are you on a quest to raise your vibration and your consciousness? I'm Sam Liebowitz, your conscious consultant, and on my show, The Conscious Consultant Hour, Awakening Humanity, we will touch upon all these topics and more. Listen live at our new time on Thursdays at 12 noon Eastern Time. That's The Conscious Consultant Hour, Awakening Humanity, Thursdays, 12 noon on talkradio.nyc.
Are you interested in having a better relationship with yourself, others, and God? Greetings. I'm your host, Dr. George Andow, for the show A Journey Through Into Awareness. On my show, we journey into the awareness that the mind of God is the true seat of our personal consciousness. We join together each Monday at 7 p.m., so tune in on Talk Radio NYC.
Did you know that nearly one in five adults in the U.S. battles mental illness? Hi, my name is Albert Dabba. I'm the host of the show Extra Inning. Extra Innings, I discuss the topics of wellness, mental health, and the experience of surviving multiple suicides within my family. Listen live every Monday at 6 p.m. Eastern to Extra Innings for discussions with sports figures, artists, mental health professionals, and many others. That's Monday at 6 p.m. Eastern on talkradio.nyc.
Hi, I'm Graham Dobbin. Join me every Thursday evening for The Mind Behind Leadership here on talkradio.nyc. We speak to people from business, sport, military and politics, all around what makes a great leader. The personal experiences of what's worked and, maybe more importantly, what hasn't worked. So, that's 7 o'clock every Thursday evening, The Mind Behind Leadership here on talkradio.nyc. Listen to real stories of real leaders.
You're listening to Talk Radio NYC. Uplift, educate, empower.
Welcome back to Employment Law Today. I'm your host, Eric Sauber, here on talkradio.nyc. I'm here with my guest tonight, Chris Coons of Coons Analytics LLC. Chris, it's great to have you on the show. When we left off before the commercial break, I left you with the question, what types of businesses do you think most benefit, let's say, from statistics analysis to improve the hiring practices? And I'm referring to, of course, both in terms of size of businesses and of any particular industries that jump out at you?
Sure. Great question. When we use statistics, typically it's for companies that have at least 10 employees in the same role. Now, they could have 10,000 in the same role or 100 in the same role, but the minimum size is 10. And in the past, we had to have 30 or 40 people in the same role, but that was with a different type of linear analytics. Today, with advanced analytics, we could actually have significant power, statistical power to predict with even smaller samples down to 10 people. So that's kind of our cutoff. Now, we look for companies that have relatively good communication between the human resource department and the frontline managers, either in the sales, service, administration, operations, so that we can get the performance data, the real performance data that's used to make personnel decisions. There has to be that communication, and that's a basically a criteria for us to be able to work and to do statistics. Now, different industries, there are a whole bunch of them. So think of the educational industry, which is huge. After the military, you've got education, right? We think of all our schools and our post-secondary graduate schools. The government, the U.S. Department of Education, now requires these institutions to publish their placement rates. After students go through a college, there are people who have the job of helping them find work. And so those are numbers that are very important to any academic institution. And so we can help them find that right type of person who is going to place students, help them get financial aid, and recruit them into the proper program and subject matter of their interest. Then think of manufacturing. So we help a company that is going to hire several hundred or over 1,000 employees, and we do this in an efficient manner by building a very accurate model. Then after that, who is going to be chosen to be promoted into that team leader position? So this is very important that companies do that correctly, and that not only the model to which the entry level employees are matched against, but also the succession planning, the other levels, so that fairness and job relatedness can be directly tied to those personnel decisions. Because it is a personnel decision not only to hire someone or to promote someone, but also legally any decision that would exclude certain employees from getting training or coaching or mentoring. And so we have to be fair, right? We want to reduce bias as much as possible, favoritism, and, you know, basically what would be inequality. Then other industries would be, for example, the, this is interesting, transportation, right? I had two very large transportation clients. One of them manufactured and operated locomotives in Canada and the U.S., and so we were able to detect with a very short assessment that on one scale, people who scored low on that scale were 4 to 5 times more prone to have injuries and accidents. Each injury and accident could cost the company between $55,000 and $65,000, and some of those were fatalities. So they were very careful about using psychometric data to create a safer workplace. Then recently I've done some modeling for transportation companies. They drive buses, commercial buses. And now with all of the sensors throughout these vehicles, we're able to detect what's called telemetric data. So how fast do they brake? Are they safe when they make turns? Do they drive in such a way, accelerate too quickly, where then they're graded as risky drivers? So we're able to find the type of personality of a safe driver, especially for, you know, driving in the inner city.
You know, there's a lot there. Yeah, really important stuff. I mean, what I hear from what you're saying, too, is that this is not just about assessing someone's personality for the sake of having an employee that's a good fit for a company and productive. I mean, sure, that's part of it. You want employees that have good morale, that are going to be a good fit, that a month later you won't look at them and say, who is this person? And they're very different than how they appeared in the interview. But what I hear you saying are a few things. One, I hear you saying that your models and the importance of proper screening using data analytics can help a company with liability issues around safety. If you have, let's say, workers who take unnecessary risks, perhaps they should not be, let's say, in a job of, you know, the head conductor or driving certain large or operating large machinery, or even if they're hiring and training folks, right? If they have an implicit bias that could lead to disparate impact discrimination, where you look at a company and suddenly there are very few minority faces there, very few people of color, and, you know, the company scratches its head. And when something does happen, I know when I get, for example, a client that comes to me and they're being sued for discrimination, there's usually a mix, right? There's some sort of direct, overt bias and discriminatory behavior or conduct or comments. But often with that, if you look at the company's culture, there's the more covert, right? The underlying, the implicit bias. Let's say you say, gee, why is it that in this company went from, you know, say 10% or 20%, you know, people who are African-American and Latino to 2% African-American and Latino and 98% Caucasian, you know, folks who look like me. You know, why is that? So certainly, and I also hear you talk about just that your models can be important when it comes to, so staving off discrimination, certainly safety, right, in the workplace. That has to do with a lot of occupational safety and OSHA violations that a company could be spreading themselves by using your company. So, and I'm interested in what you said about how this is not just for one industry. It's not just for tech. It's not just for, let's say, manufacturing, but it can be a manufacturing company or a school, an educator.
And a school. And I even had a chance to build models for elementary, middle, and high school teachers leveraging gains in learning in math and English from the actual students. We had 2 years of data, and so we were able to find the personality of those type of teachers that we had good evidence would be beneficial for the students and to create that learning atmosphere. If I want to, make an analogy. So do you play tennis, Eric? Do you play tennis?
I don't. Does ping pong count? You know, table
ping
tennis?
Ping pong counts.
Okay, sure. Then I play some ping pong. Yes, table tennis.
Okay,
sure.
Okay. Do you remember Bruce Lee?
Yes.
Bruce Lee was a karate guy, right? And there's some videos going around the internet that he could take a nunchuck, which is a stick on a chain, and he could play ping pong with it, right?
Wow.
Now, he's probably the only person in the history of mankind that could do that, right? That was so skilled. And it's probably a fake video. But normally you want to play ping pong with a paddle.
Sure.
So if you don't have a paddle and you just have a stick, you're probably going to lose, right? You might hit the ping pong ball every once in a while, but it's going to go all over the place. You have no control.
Right.
So what is that? What is that paddle? That paddle is very important. So basically, if you think of its length, those are all of the key performance indicators that are objective. So let's say we're taking a sales position.
Right.
And we're going to look at all of the salespeople in a certain role, and they're now they're remote selling. They're around the country making sales. So we're going to look at their gross revenue, their quota attainment, their profit margin, their volume, their account growth year over year, their account retention. We're going to have all of these sales metrics, and then these basically will know where everyone is in the role, whether they're below average, average, above, wherever they are in all of these metrics. And then we'll have another set of metrics that go the other direction, how wide that paddle is, because you just don't want a tall, narrow one. You want some width, too, so you can find the sweet spot when you hit the ping pong ball. All of those are going to be survey results, pulse survey results, annual performance appraisals, different types of gathering of information about how they're doing the job. So that's a little more subjective, but it's very critical because you want to protect the company culture. It's not just about that they get the job done, but they do it the right way. And so when we have done that study, we hand you that ping pong paddle, and now you're able to play, and you're able to place the ball. Well, I'm going to put this way on the end of the table. That's an entry level employee, or I'm going to just hit it barely over the net. So you have to, I have to reach forward to get it. That's a manager, or wherever you want to go along the edge, that's a supervisor. So now when you start having balls come at you, and these are candidates, they're sending in their resumes, they want to be interviewed, they want to work for your company, you get to match them to all of those models. And they're well built, so you get you get an understanding of what their performance will be in different roles. And of course, now you're the winner because you're ready for any type of serve they give you.
I like that analogy, Chris. And I'm sure people listening who are tennis fans would substitute a tennis racket for the paddle. But I thank you for substituting for me. But that's really something. I hear about, so these models that you're building, these using statistical data, analyzing it, right, breaking it down, drawing certain conclusions, and then using that to analyze the current applicants or current employees, right, who are moving up. Let's say you talked about succession planning, can be helpful in terms of, say, predicting employee performance and longevity, as well as rooting out negative employees, or I should call them problematic employees. And, it's interesting because these are often the underlying issues that if companies know this before, if they can screen someone out in advance who might end up being a perpetrator of discrimination or might end up being someone who is a before, let's say, sales performer, then they can save themselves the time, money, and energy and effort of having to rehire. You know, one of my colleagues, Jenna Falk, was on my show. She talks about her PR and marketing, and a lot of what she does comes down to, can her services help you to either make money, right, or save money, and to free up more time and increase productivity. So I think it's great that you're talking about that. We have to take our second commercial break, but so we're at the halfway point. When we come back, and folks, I'll have more of Chris Coons here from Coons Analytics LLC. We're talking about drivers for employer success using statistics and data analytics and models that Chris has built and designed to help your company to succeed in hiring, employee retention, and succession planning. So if everyone could just stick around to Talk Radio NYC Employment Law Today, stick around. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Talk Radio NYC. Uplift, educate, empower.
Hey everybody, it's Tommy D, the Nonprofit Sector Connector, coming at you from my attic. Each week here on talkradio.nyc, I host a program, Philanthropy in Focus. Nonprofits impact us each and every day, and it's my focus to help them amplify their message and tell their story. Listen each week at 10 a.m. Eastern Standard Time until 11 a.m. Eastern Standard Time, right here on talkradio.nyc.
Are you a business owner? Do you want to be a business owner? Do you work with business owners? Hi, I'm Stephen Fry, your small and medium-sized business or SMB guy, and I'm the host of the new show, Always Friday. While I love to have fun on my show, we take those Friday feelings of freedom and clarity to discuss popular topics on the minds of SMBs today. Please join me and my various special guests on Friday at 11 a.m. on talkradio.nyc.
Do you run or are ready to open your own business? Hi, I'm Jeremiah Fox. I've been operating and opening small business for the last 25 years, and I'm the host of the new show, The Entrepreneurial Web. Tune in every Friday at noon Eastern Time for insights and stories on the nuances of running small business right here on Fridays at noon, talkradio.nyc.
I am Joseph Franklin McElroy, host of the new podcast, Wise Content Creates Wealth. It airs on talkradio.nyc every Friday afternoon from 1 p.m. to 2. They say content is king. Well, wise content rules the world. Every episode features tools and tips for content marketing and business people telling the wise content stories of that success. Tune in every Friday from 1 p.m. to 2 on talkradio.nyc.
You're listening to Talk Radio NYC at www.talkradio.nyc. Now broadcasting 24 hours a day.
Welcome back to Employment Law Today. I'm your host, Eric Sauver, here with my guest tonight, Chris Kunze from Kunze Analytics LLC. And Chris, it's so good to have you on the show this evening. We were talking a moment ago about the different models you have and different programs and how your services can help small to mid-sized businesses out there with their hiring, their retention, and their employees' productivity and safety and so forth. So interesting stuff that we're describing tonight and talking about here. I was curious to hear actually two things. One thing jumped out at me before I asked my next question. It seems that these tests, these psychometric tests, have a bit of a, so they are connected to a personality profile. So I'm wondering, do your models have any connection to any type of those personality tests that some of us are familiar with, such as the Myers-Squibbs or some of those other tests out there that you hear about?
Myers-Briggs? Sure. The Myers-Briggs, which is a 16-quadrant or a DISC tool, 4-quadrant. Those instruments are best used for understanding the personalities of your employees, but they're mm-hmm. not designed for personnel decisions. So if you do have a more robust tool, every once in a while, a scale from or some information from those instruments could be used to add some greater richness. Mm-hmm. But normally, you would use a tool that has been designed for pre-screening and pre-hire assessing.
So it's interesting because I have colleagues who, as I know, and you might know too, perhaps use and utilize these assessments and the DISC assessment, for example, or the Myers-Briggs test, which what I hear you saying is can be helpful, perhaps in say knowing your employees' personality, maybe their style, what they most respond to, but for a more perhaps in-depth, as you mentioned earlier in the show, deep dive.
Think about the difference. Myers-Briggs has 16 different personality types, and you can slice and dice those personality types in many different ways and find a lot of insight. But with the type of tool that I'm talking about, when we look at the possibility, the possible number of patterns that we could create for a client, it's somewhere between 6 billion and one with 20 zeros after it. So our software cycles through all of these different patterns to find just the right one for the client. And so the other assessments, while they're valuable for why they were designed, they don't have all of this capability of customization and predictive quality. The U.S. Department of Labor actually publishes validity guidelines and the correlation between performance on the job, or it could be tenure in days. If the company has a lot of turnover and there's poor morale because, you know, it's just a revolving door, then we have to build models, not so much on performance, but you have to stop the bleeding on the wound to retain employees. And that's a little bit different from a performance model. So we're looking at tenure and days. We'll build a model that will increase that until the client is satisfied that retention has been stabilized. And then we'll continue to have retention, tenure and days of the employee, average tenure with performance criteria. And then we'll build it out that way. So, it's we really need to go beyond and use the modern technologies and the power of the computer. And artificial intelligence is really automated reasoning. You know, it's not something that's, you know, scary or whatever. It's me doing a task that would take me 600 years to do in a couple of minutes.
Right.
And I could probably make a lot of errors and finding a needle in a haystack. Well, you have to use computing power to do that. But the machine doesn't understand the ramifications. I do as the data scientist and as the consultant. So it's the proper use of these technologies to help our clients really have a solution. And these are complex. So let's say we're hiring a loan officer. And they have to produce so much mortgage premiums. They have to retain their clients. They have to have good performance appraisal reviews. And we want to retain them. So maybe the assessment will find models that are good predicting two or three. But that fourth metric, that's when the machine learning then looks at all the possibilities to find one where all the metrics are going in the right direction. And that's these are highly complex problems, nonlinear, and you need the help of technology.
Yes. And, you know, people out there listening, if they can identify what you're saying as it relates to their own business and their own practice or profession, in that data in and of itself doesn't always tell a story unless the person who has that data can make sense of it, right? Can interpret it and provide an explanation, provide perhaps some context, and talk about what the implications might be and how to then use that data to make decisions. And, you know, this I think is true whether you're a website design company. You know, a lot of website design companies will say, give you a report of your website performance, and it's all certain data, certain metrics. And if you don't understand the terminology being used or the perspective of what a certain number of units or visitors, you know, is, I mean, what is that in relation to other websites? It doesn't really mean much, you know. And likewise, I can, let's say, have clients of mine as an employment law attorney. I can find perhaps some issues where they might be out of touch with what the law requires, and I can talk about the liability and damages, and maybe they are, for example, not paying overtime properly. But if I don't explain to them what that means and how to fix it and how to do so in the correct way, then it's just the data alone, the information is not going to help them. That's why, you know, a lot of people in different fields, we have in law and I think in medicine, other fields, of course, one of the mugs I've loved seeing recently, it's a mug and it says, you know, please do not mistake your Google search for my law degree. And, you know, I've seen variations of that with please do not mistake your Google search for my fill in the blank, right? For my medical degree, for my computer programming degree. So, you know, we need, what I hear you saying is we need the power of artificial intelligence and the computer automated processes, but we need the human element, you know, that's the brain power, that's, you know, that's you, Chris Kunze and Kunze Analytics LLC to make sense of this.
That's right.
And
Eric,
speaking of data, you know,
I wanted to just make a comment that we've been talking about performance metrics, and then we spoke about retention, employee retention or turnover. But also, when you apply a model, you want to make sure that there aren't any protected classes that are negatively impacted, right? Adverse impact. And so the we're looking at the four-fifths rule to make sure that there are there's sufficient hiring of protected classes. And when you put all of these criteria together, that's what we solve for, right? Companies in particular litigious industries will need to look at adverse impact. And I have fun projects every once in a while working with a company that creates skills tests. They have over 300 skills tests. And the last couple of projects I've done, they've asked me to do these adverse impact. And they'll say, can you shorten the test and then also make it more predictive and make sure that we know where the cutoff is so there's no adverse impact? Well, that's fun for a data scientist.
Like a challenge for you. I like a challenge, as well in the case or, you know, client. And that's important for people to understand, too, that these statistics are very crucial and critical in terms of having the right, let's say, again, disproportionate hiring practices. If you don't have, and protect the class for those that might not know, and people who might not be in the employment field, mainly referred to under the law when it comes to employment, people based on their race, gender, national origin, in states and cities, sexual orientation, which is now being pushed towards federal protection as well. Things like familial status, religion, able-bodied, disabled. So people in protected classes can't be discriminated against either overtly, think about, you know, overt harassment or comment or exclusion from the workplace, but also cannot be impacted adversely in a sort of covert way, right? Where the numbers reflect, say, again, if everyone in the company, I like to say, like tell my clients, if everyone looks like me, you know, just as a white, you know, male of a certain age, gender, et cetera, then that can be problematic. And so it's great that you have all these different methods and also all the different end goal ends and the goals that you accomplish, you know, for your clients. We are heading towards a break, but I just want to, again, remind folks, those that joined us late, I'm here today with Chris Kunze from Kunze Analytics LLC. And Chris is a data scientist, and his company basically uses statistics and analytics and models that Chris builds, algorithms and such, to help companies with their employment, basically with their hiring practices, retention, succession planning, to really weed out perhaps implicitly biased or problematic employees, and also to attract the top gun, the high performers, the people that play well with others, et cetera. So you're listening to us here on Employment Law Today and on Talk Radio NYC. We have to take a commercial break. So folks, stick around. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Talk Radio NYC. Uplift, educate, empower.
Thank you.
Are you a small business trying to navigate the COVID-19 related employment laws? Hello, I'm Eric Sauver, employment law business law attorney and host of the new radio show, Employment Law Today. On my show, we'll have guests to discuss the common employment law challenges business owners are facing during these trying times. Tune in on Tuesday evenings from 5 p.m. to 6 p.m. Eastern Time on talkradio.nyc.
Gateway to the Smokies. It airs on talkradio.nyc every Tuesday night from 6 p.m. to 7. Every episode is dedicated to memorable experiences in the Great Smoky Mountains National Park and surrounding areas. This show features experts and locals who will expound upon the richness of culture, history, and adventure that awaits you in the Smokies. Tune in every Tuesday from 6 p.m. to 7 on talkradio.nyc.
Do you love or are you intrigued about New York City and its neighborhoods? I'm Jeff Goodman, host of Rediscovering New York, a weekly show that showcases New York's history and its extraordinary neighborhoods. Every Tuesday live at 7 p.m., we focus on a particular neighborhood and explore its history, its vibe, its feel, and its energy. Tune in live every Tuesday at 7 p.m. on talkradio.nyc.
You're listening to Talk Radio NYC at www.talkradio.nyc. Now broadcasting 24 hours a day.
Welcome back to Employment Law Today. I'm your host, Eric Sauver. I'm here every Tuesday night, 5 p.m. to 6 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. I know that, Chris, you're in the Central Time Zone, so it's actually 4 to 5 for folks watching by you. And an interesting question came to mind. I was wondering, we've been in this pandemic now for almost a year, and I wondered if that's I'm wondering if that's enough of a time frame to gather data. So my question for you is, has your data review analytics revealed any COVID-19-based changes, let's say, in the rate that companies are having poor hiring practices or failed succession planning?
Eric, so what I'm seeing is that, and we're reading about it in the news, that because of the closing of schools and children being at home in many parts of the country, one of the parents or caregivers has to be home. So employers are deciding, well, who's going to have that flexible schedule and go home? And then they're going to get used to, in this long period of time, people working remotely or people in a hybrid situation where at some point they'll be working maybe 1 or 2 days at home and the rest of the days in the office. And then who are the employees that will be required to be at brick and mortar office. So a lot of people are going to be vying for that privilege to maybe be more flexible and stay at home. They're going to like that. But then the employer has to probably say no to some people if they're not able to do that because functions have to be fulfilled. They have to have representation. And going back, we're seeing that, you know, that's a big issue with employees being furloughed, and also many companies have let go employees. So who did they let go? This was an opportunity for managers maybe to give into their bias or favoritism and get rid of people that they themselves didn't get along with. But these could have been excellent performers that should be rehired back as soon as possible. So all of these issues of letting people go and hiring them back, and then once they're in a remote situation working, the employer might say, oh my gosh, well, why don't we recode them as an independent contractor instead of an employee? Then we don't have to pay benefits. And they might start thinking of other ways to, restructure the whole relationship, like as if they were gig employees, right? So there's a lot of opportunity here. And this happened 10 years ago after the 2008-2009 economic crisis,
yeah.
Dr. Peter Capelli, who runs the Center for Human Resources at the Wharton School at the University of Pennsylvania, has written a lot about this topic. And employers, they got used to, they let a lot of, 10 years ago, a lot of employees go, and they didn't hire them back right away. So the people that were working were overworked. And they had all of this load put on their shoulders, and a lot of them didn't receive increases in their compensation. So we hope that doesn't happen again, that employers, as soon as they're able to rehire their people and give them training, invest in them so that we have an equitable relationship between both parties.
Right. And some interesting data there. You know, Chris, what we're talking about just now with the COVID-19 implications, it kind of takes us back to what you and I were discussing a little earlier on in the show, right? About, let's say these managers or employers need to either bring some people back or leave some people remotely, and they don't want to be, say, inequitable or have disparate impact in terms of, are they bringing back, say, all the Caucasian workers and not enough people of color? Are they bringing back people, let's say, of a certain age group and not a different age group? And is that going to be statistically relevant? Are you going to
see, or the women? 2.3 right. million women have lost their jobs since February of 2020.
Yes, excellent point. And I have a colleague, Simone Sloan. She does HR consulting and diversity and inclusion work, and she is on my show. We talked a lot about this, about the pandemic's basically disparate impact, right? Disproportionately impacting employees of color, and especially women of color. And you see that with people who are single parents or homeschooling, or you see that with people in terms of their resources. So it's interesting that you talk about that and some of the data you've seen. I'm wondering, can one of your programs perhaps be used to help employers to sort of take these tests and see, hey, maybe we should bring back employees of this personality type. Maybe we should give more leeway to employees staying home who are of this personality type. Is that something that your programs might be able to predict for our listeners out there?
Yes, it is. And I've been working on it for years. And now we have a six-step method to be able to help employers to really open up their applicant pools and hire many more people that they can have confidence in. So how do we do this? Step number one is there are over 200 different assessments out there that are used in pre-hire. So the first step is to choose a reliable assessment that has been designed for pre-screening of job applicants. And if you don't have one, I have a very favorite one that I like to use.
Okay.
Then step two is for us to use all that fancy automated reasoning to build a very accurate success pattern for each one of the roles in your company. Step three is we build scorecards. And these scorecards then have all of your metrics in them, as well as the employees or the candidates' assessment results. And each one of the key performance indicators, the metrics, has a different type of statistical model behind it, one that's very powerful. Instead of having 10% accuracy, it can have up to 90% or more accuracy. And these are lengthy, under the hood, you see these thousands of lines of code, 10 different what we call regression trees and so forth. But we build scorecards, and then the company can start to tinker with all the different people and figure out how to coach everyone to greater productivity. When we find the insights, then we put them in an action plan so the manager and the direct report can work all year on these slight behavioral changes. The fifth step is the revolutionary one. We simulate all the possible combinations of someone's assessment results so that you have a table for each KPI. You'll never have to guess what someone's assessment results mean in your performance metrics or tenure. And that's for the hiring manager. We call it a cheat sheet. Finally, we have a visualization tool on the web, and these are dynamic dashboards, excuse me, And these dashboards allow the manager in front of the employee to put in their scores and to play with that one behavioral trait or two that can significantly increase a productivity. So it visualizes the modeling in six steps.
That's really something. I appreciate your sharing that with us tonight. We've got a couple minutes to end. I want to give you the chance to certainly share with our listeners tonight how they can find you, how they can contact you. I would say one thing before that, though. One thing that strikes me about you, you know, Chris, and about Kunze Analytics, certainly, right, your expertise, your knowledge, you really seem to know your stuff, and your passion for it. You know, I find that combination so crucial. I mean, I love what I do as well. When I represent clients in employment, labor law matters, you know, hybrid class actions, complicated stuff. You know, I tell people that it's, even if you don't understand, let's say, how something is being done, if you trust that the person you're hiring, he or she, or they know it, and they understand it, and they can deliver what you need. So in our case here, people hiring Chris Kunze and Kunze Analytics can really get a sense of that you would deliver for them in terms of employee retention and practices. We've got about a minute left. So I want to, before I sign off, I want to say to our listeners tonight, I want to hear first how can people find you, if you tell us a quick, your contact.
Sure. Just go to kunzeanalytics.com Then you'll have our contact information. You'll even be able to see my schedule and schedule a meeting.
Great. And that's K-U-N-Z-E analytics, one word, .com.
Right. No space between the words.
Okay.
KunzeAnalytics.com.
In the last 20 seconds, I'll just say again, once again, I'm here tonight with Chris Kunze of Kunze Analytics LLC for your hiring and retention needs. Folks, thanks once again for joining us on another evening of Employment Law Today. We're here every Tuesday. I'm here every Tuesday at 5 p.m. with different guests to help your business to thrive and survive this pandemic. So stick around. Come back next week, and thank you so much. And Chris, thank you for joining us this evening.
You're welcome. Thank you, Eric.
My pleasure.
Okay.
You're listening to Talk Radio NYC at www.talkradio.nyc. Now broadcasting 24 hours a day.
Hey everybody, it's Tommy D, the Nonprofit Sector Connector, coming at you from my attic. Each week here on TalkRadio.nyc, I host a program, Philanthropy in Focus. Nonprofits impact us each and every day, and it's my focus to help them amplify their message and tell their story. Listen each week at 10 a.m. Eastern Standard Time until 11 a.m. Eastern Standard Time, right here on TalkRadio.nyc.
Hi, I'm Graham Dobbin. Join me every Thursday evening for The Mind Behind Leadership here on TalkRadio.nyc. We speak to people from business, sport, military and politics, all around what makes a great leader. The personal experiences of what's worked and, maybe more importantly, what hasn't worked. So, that's 7 o'clock every Thursday evening. The Mind Behind Leadership here on TalkRadio.nyc. Listen to real stories of real leaders.
Hi, I am Joseph Franklin McElroy, host of the new podcast, Wise Content Creates Wealth. It airs on talkradio.nyc every Friday afternoon from 1 p.m. to 2. They say content is king. Well, wise content rules the world. Every episode features tools and tips for content marketing and business people telling the wise content stories of that success. Tune in every Friday from 1 p.m. to 2 on talkradio.nyc.
Hey, all you listeners. Looking to boost your business? Why not advertise on Talk Radio NYC with very reasonable rates? Interested? Simply send us a message on our website, talkradio.nyc.
Do you love or are you intrigued about New York City and its neighborhoods? I'm Jeff Goodman, host of Rediscovering New York, a weekly show that showcases New York's history and its extraordinary neighborhoods. Every Tuesday live at 7 p.m., we focus on a particular neighborhood and explore its history, its vibe, its feel, and its energy. Tune in live every Tuesday at 7 p.m. on talkradio.nyc.
Franklin McElroy, host of the new podcast, Gateway to the Smokies. It airs on talkradio.nyc every Tuesday night from 6 p.m. to 7. Every episode is dedicated to memorable experiences in the Great Smoky Mountains National Park and surrounding areas. This show features experts and locals who will expound upon the richness of culture, history, and adventure that awaits you in the Smokies. Tune in every Tuesday from 6 p.m. to 7 on talkradio.nyc.
You're listening to Talk Radio NYC. Uplift, educate, empower.